Hey everybody, welcome to Two Out the First. It's December 11th, 2023. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Hope you had a good weekend. It was an interesting couple of days, obviously. that's putting it mildly. What happened over Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I mean, just unbelievable stuff this past week. And then the weekend concludes with the announcement from the PGA Tour that we'll talk about that I think is going to fly over a lot of people's heads and really doesn't matter to the broader fan, the person who watches golf from week to week, but it is something we will go over. First of all, we're presented by our friends at Swannies. Check them out, swannies.co. Use the promo code GOLFNEWSNET25 and save 25% off your first order. We just got our first snowstorm, legit snowstorm, and by legit, I mean a half inch of snow in 2 years, maybe 3 years. And they just delayed school by 2 hours, so that's why I'm delayed in recording this morning. But this is now winter. Winter is here, and so you need to be prepared if you're going to play some winter golf. Swannies got you covered with just great button-up quarter-zip styles that look great, lots of different color blocks. The anorak, which was obviously not meant for winter, but looks awesome anywhere you go, especially with the corduroy look. Polos, hats, t-shirts, sweatshirts, I mean, you name it. They've got you covered with a great style at very reasonable prices. Swannies.co. So, where do we start? So, I recorded the show on the morning that Rahm left for LIV. And the information had been out there. You know, he's going to LIV. It's happening today. I think George Savarikas had put it out there. Obviously, it had been out there from other folks. Pro LIV. Just kind of sort of neutral, mainstream, not mainstream. It had been out there. It was kind of a matter of timing of that day as Rahm was going to New York City. He was going to ink the deal, and then it was all going to get announced. And interestingly enough, he said after the fact that he had made the choice to sign that day, that he finally decided, you know what, I'm going to do it. Now, I would argue his mind had been made up probably if that was the thing he went with. But nevertheless, he signed the contract that day. They've got everything done. They filmed a two-minute interview with David Faraday where Rahm did all the platitudes that everybody who goes to LIV talks about, all the innovation, oh, I love team golf, oh, it's we're going to grow the game, and blah, blah, blah. And of course, none of that's true. It's all BS, and Rahm knows it when he's saying it. Everyone in the room knows it as they're hearing it. It's all kind of part and parcel of how this has worked, and that he looked like he was in the middle of a hostage video on Fox News when he talked to Brett Baer, who's a huge golf fan, but they get the scoop about it, the first conversation with him, because they know Fox is generally going to be very friendly to their points of view. So that happens, and he did have the press conference with a select group of reporters, of course, me being someone who's not very friendly to LIV, or not, I shouldn't say not very friendly to LIV, but obviously on the record is not for LIV, that obviously not getting the call for that, but that's where he talked about making that decision that day. And the reaction, I think, is pretty swift. I think if you look at kind of all the metrics, you know, everything that's been put out there, if you look at different polls, and of course these things are not scientific, but different significant sports or golf accounts put out polls of, well, will this make you more interested in LIV? Will you watch any more? And almost universally, no. The response to Rahm's tweet and social media posts about joining LIV, a whole lot of expletives and traitor, and that's probably 3/4 of it, maybe 80% of it, compared to people like, hey, good for you, good for your family, welcome to LIV, you know, those types of things. And I think that was a big kind of wake-up call for the PGA Tour folks. I mean, Rory McIlroy just a few weeks ago said he thinks Rahm would stay on the tour. He's a PGA Tour guy. You had that kind of sentiment out there thinking, you know, this guy's been vociferously pro-PGA Tour, anti-LIV format. Surely he might be kicking the tires, but he's not going to go with it. And then that changed in a couple weeks too. He's out the door, man. It's over. And whatever the final agreement that he took on is, and I've heard varying versions of it because no one actually knows. That's one of the kind of secret things in here. Unless you've seen the contract, you don't know. Just numbers are thrown about. It's a weird game of telephone. That's why you hear, oh, 300 million, 500 million, 600 million. Then it's converted into pounds sterling or euros, and it just all gets blown up because people just make shit up, just to be clear. And I think the fair thing to say is the likelihood is Rom got 300 million guaranteed in that range. Then he got a 25% equity stake in his team. Now there will be a 13th team, so now there will be 52 players on LIV, which that's another thing to think about, and we'll talk about here. And then, you know, he's probably got incentives to some degree, but more importantly, they've probably attached, and in the public rumor mongering, the value of that team to be, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, when it is currently worth $0, effectively $0, for a variety of reasons. But that it could be worth something someday, worth a substantial amount of money. But needless to say, he's got well over nine figures, halfway to 10 figures in the bag. Halfway to 10 figures in the bag. And I understand why he took the deal. I think anyone sitting in that situation, or has never been in that situation, or lives paycheck to paycheck, or has had money problems, probably has thought about this and gone, yeah, it'd be hard to say no. And I'm not trying to be sympathetic. I've felt this way about everybody. Pretty much everyone who's taken the money, I understand why. Now, all of them are also, the ones who took nine-figure deals, all of them were doing great. They're all millionaires many times over in a way that most of us can only dream. And then they got richer on top of that. So it's a strange thing to go, yeah, I would take the money, but when kind of the counter is, but you, if you already had a lot of money, would you take the money? And the answer for most people would probably still be yes, because money is one of those things most people think they can never have enough of. And I guess they're not wrong. It just becomes an increasing tax burden, I suppose. But I think the reaction to Rom, I think most people thought it was going to be more sympathetic, and it doesn't seem to have played out that way. And for whatever reason, and I think there are a couple reasons, but it seemed like the general reaction to Rom's moving to LIV was received with a different kind of vitriol. Like when Brooks went, or Bryson was like, oh, thank God, he stinks. You know, people don't like Bryson. Okay, well, he's out of here. Patrick Reed, oh, thank God, he's gone. We don't have to watch him anymore. He's gone. Please leave. Brooks, oh, I get it. You're hurt. You know, we'll see you later. A lot of people have so-so opinions about Brooks. Dustin Johnson was just kind of like, hey, I'm taking the money. I don't care anymore. I'll see you later. A lot of people vibe with that. People got angry at Phil Mickelson, of course, and I think people are even more angry at Phil Mickelson now. But this Rom move, I think, catalyzed not anger necessarily just toward the people who went to LIV, but at the whole darn thing. And I don't think that's going anywhere anytime soon. I think this was the watershed moment for the public's relationship with professional golf. And I don't know that it's easy to come back from this. Because from the outside, a lot of people who don't follow golf week to week assume the June 6th announcement meant the deal is done, they've merged together, it's all going to happen. And a lot of reactions were, I thought they merged already. What? Why is this happening? And then you explain it to them and they go, oh God, that's terrible. I don't like that at all. And I completely understand. I've spent a long time covering golf. This is year 20. Covering golf, maybe year 21, I'm about to start year 21 covering golf in some fashion, whether that was in college doing a streaming radio show, whether I was doing a blog, whether it's been doing it professionally for the last 13 years, whatever that is. And there are times when I have felt fed up with pro golf and never to the level I have felt the last few days. That this is all just, it is a big double set of middle fingers to the fans. And everybody who is fighting does not understand that. Well, nearly everybody. All the people that are public figures, that are the most named figures, they don't seem to understand that. I think Rory does to a degree. I think Tiger does to a degree. I think some of the LIV guys do to a degree. They just don't really care. They see it from the prism of their life and what it means to them, and a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, to be fair, to have a big whale, the Piff, on the hook and gouge them. Get as much money as you possibly can from them before either they change their mind or the deal is not available anymore. So that's why people are doing it. That's why the Tony Finau and Tyrrell Hatton are expected to go and sign with LIV. Because that this is their chance. If they think that what Rob has done here, signing this enormous deal to play LIV Golf, which is expected to be 3 years, by the way. So $300 million for 3 years worth of work. But because it's a three-year deal. If that's the cat, you know, if that's the wake-up call of, okay, well, on one end, we better, you know, the people on the board, we better get this deal done, or the Piff's just going to walk away and throw more money at this until we can't compete. That's on one end of it. On the other end of it, guys like Tony Finau's being sued by two people right now for 20% or something of his lifetime earnings because his dad made a bad deal, or may have made a bad deal with financiers, private financiers, at the early stages of his professional career. Tyrrell Hatton, I don't think, gives two F's about anything. So why not take the money? And if they're both of, if they're of the mind that the deal is coming because Rahm's actions hasten a deal, then they got to get theirs now. They may never even have to play a tournament in LIV. They probably will. But you might never have to even play a true LIV tournament if this happens quickly. And you might go, okay, well, the 24 season happens as everyone laid out. You know, the LIV players play LIV, the PGA Tour players play the PGA Tour. At the end of the season, it somehow all merges together. Team golf somehow continues to exist. That's probably one of the big sticking points now, if not the biggest sticking point that was there before, about these negotiations. How does LIV continue to exist, and how do PGA Tour players get sucked into that, or do they get compensated for that, or how does that all work? There's that. And that's probably a big piece of this now, is now the Saudis can go, look, we were willing to give you, as reported by, and I've heard this otherwise, you know, a 10-figure fund to make good as many people as you choose to, you know, as a mea culpa. Sorry we poached your best players and may have destroyed professional golf in the process, but now that we're all one happy family, here's $1 billion and you guys dole it out to everyone who stayed on the PGA Tour as you see fit. Congratulations. And oh, by the way, we're going to throw $2 billion at this product and invest in it. That's where they're coming from here. And it just feels like there's been a lot of fumbling by the PGA Tour and the board. There's been rumors that Ed Herlihy and Jimmy Dunn have not really been involved in the negotiation past what they helped to negotiate and was announced on June 6th. I have no idea where Monahan is in all of this. I mean, he's effectively, he's not powerless, but he doesn't have a lot of power because he doesn't control the board anymore. That's a player-controlled board, which the players wanted. They got in August, but that may have not worked in their favor. I mean, I think I've heard a couple of people say this, but the reality is having someone like Yasser Al-Rumayyan, who's in complete control of an enormous amount of money and can spend at his direction and his direction alone, puts him in an easier position to make moves compared to the PGA Tour that, as we've talked about, has, you've got Monahan, Herlihy, and Dunn. You've got their executive teams. You've got the non-player portion of the board, which is now in the minority. You've got the player portion of the board. You've got Rory McIlroy, who just came off of that. You've got Patrick Cantlay and his competing interests, who he's dabbled with LIV, but obviously never got there. He also, a lot of people don't really seem to like Patrick Cantlay, for a variety of reasons. Then you've got all of the middling players, the quote-unquote mules, as they've been dubbed these days, the rank-and-file player, who they don't really want to be taken advantage of again and again, even though they probably have felt that way for a long time, even though that's probably also not true. And you've got them to compete with. You've got all of these different interests on the PGA Tour side. And oh, by the way, you've got sponsors, because Wells Fargo didn't want to pay in upwards of $20 million a year to be a sponsor of a signature event again and again. And so they're like, well, we're not going to meet you in the middle. You know, the tour was not willing to meet them in the middle and maybe subsidize it a little bit, even though they're working toward a deal with private equity where they're going to have billions of dollars available to just backfill, which is insane to me. So they're going away. So now you've got them out the door and after next year. And they wanted to stay. They wanted to be involved in golf. Now, maybe they get involved in some other way, but they wanted to be involved in golf. And you couldn't get them to do that. So there's that problem. Now the economics of it, you've got the player movement, you've got lots of different issues to check off. There's a lot. There's really a lot to deal with here. And for that reason, I think it is particularly difficult to understand the nature of the negotiations on the PGA Tour side. Because they're not only negotiating with the Saudis, they're negotiating with themselves in myriad different ways. Which brings us to the kind of second piece of this, which is on Sunday night, the PGA Tour announced, or basically copied and pasted word for word on their website, a release to the players from the PGA Tour Policy Board that says they have chosen a group called Strategic Sports Group to be their kind of also RAM partner. And they're going to negotiate with them on a deal, and they're going to continue negotiating with the Saudis. Now, who's Strategic Sports Group? That's the group that includes Fenway Sports, Steve Cohen, Arthur Blank, all kinds of different people who basically own different sports teams in North America and beyond. These are groups or singular billionaires combined, probably worth, at least on paper, I don't know, $100 billion, something like that. So they've got a lot of money behind them. They've got a lot available to them, and yet still probably have 1/7 to 1/8, you know, somewhere in that range, the wealth of the Saudi Public Investment Fund. And oh, by the way, they're also probably not all perfectly aligned, again, in the same way that Yasser Al-Rumayyan controlling the fund with MBS behind him can. So that negotiation has to happen. They say they're still going to work with the PIF. They still hope to make progress in the coming weeks. And that's something. But here's, when this deal was made, when the framework agreement was signed at the end of May and announced a week later, on June 6th, there were two really important things in the agreement. Well, three really important things in hindsight. One, the most important, was to stop the lawsuits. Eliminate the legal action once and forever, because everybody was going to look bad. We've talked about that repeatedly. Two, as it turned out to be a bigger deal than maybe you first thought, the anti-poaching clause was a big deal. But the Department of Justice went to both bodies and said, hey, look, that's non-competitive behavior. That's anti-competitive behavior. You can't have this in here, or we will absolutely torpedo whatever deal you guys make. And in a quote-unquote sign of good faith, they removed it. Well, the Public Investment Fund realized once that was off the table, they had a card to play. They had a card to work with, that if none of this was working out, and it was very evident that it wasn't coming together, that they could just go and sign guys. They're willing to spend hundreds of millions of dollars on one player, by the way, that will not bring many more eyeballs to live, at least in this country. Sorry to John Rahm for that reality. But they're willing to spend that kind of cash as a premium to make sure they get their deal done. If they were willing to put $3 billion into the PGA Tour, $1 billion just to give away to the players like a lottery, and $2 billion to invest in this PGA Tour Enterprises concept, what's another $300 million? They'll never pay Rahm the other $300 million. If they do, that also doesn't matter. But let's just take it for what it is currently at $300 million and say that. That's a 10% premium to make sure you get the deal done. That's it. That's nothing. I mean, that's a bad tip to a waiter. Cool. They got the money. They can do that. They'll do it with Finau. They'll do it with Hatton. Let's call that another 100 mil between them. I don't know what it is. Let's just say it. $100 million between them. Could be 150. Whatever. Again, rounding error. Just to prove the point that they don't want team golf to go anywhere and that they are willing to negotiate with pain and cause pain to get people to come to the table. Okay? So the third big piece of this deal was the money to get them to stop spending against you because they have the unlimited, not totally unlimited, but by comparison, unlimited amount of money to work with. And even if the PGA Tour aligns itself with this strategic sports group and their valuation on paper combined is in the $100 billion range, they still can't just spend all that money. I'm sure they're willing to throw 10 figures at it. But they still don't have the kind of capital to deploy that the Saudis do on a whim. Because the reality is the PGA Tour is still structured in a way that is a membership organization. LIV is not. LIV never will be. It's just a basic LLC. And that LLC works with a clear head. There's no membership piece. You are not in, no, probably not, it's not an employment agreement. It's a an agreement with a freelancer, effectively. Just like you do on the PGA Tour. You're, quote, paid as a, quote, unquote, independent contractor. But you have some ownership stake if you're certain players in your team. So they can negotiate from a structural position of strength. They don't have to appease a membership. They could sign whoever they want for whatever they want. They could set up purses. They can change the league on a whim. It's all of that is written into the contracts. They can do what they want. And if you're under contract with LIV, you do what they tell you to do. You play when they play. And you put a smile on your face. Or otherwise, we don't pay you. It's very different. So those things work against the tour. The amount of money they can spend for no reason, or any reason, that it's not a membership organization, and that the lawsuits were there. And then you could throw in the anti-poaching piece of it, which kind of falls under all of that. So now they've got to come up with pretty quickly a deal. And I don't think it's hyperbole to say that the tour's future is on the line in the next 20 days, or if they agree to extend it, however long that extension is. They've got to get their act together extremely quickly. Rahm's departure hastened anything, although they probably knew it was coming. And they've got to get things together toot sweet. Otherwise, it's just gonna not be great. I mean, I don't think the PGA Tour goes away is a thing that's on the table. That I'm not there with that. But this entire time, we have talked about from the day June 6th was announced that the Saudis had bought professional golf. That's still my opinion. That is still my belief. And that was not completely evident to everybody on the PGA Tour board or who has joined the board since is staggering. It is misguided. It speaks of delusion. It's a failure because they went pussyfooted around and said, well, we could just go get this money instead. We don't need you. And to a degree, that's probably true. They don't necessarily need the Saudis' money. That's not it. I mean, that's a big part of it. But you could go align yourselves with Strategic Sports Group and have a tremendous amount of money at your disposal. However, as a membership organization, and the way it is structured, the PGA Tour can't just sign and pay players enormous sums of money to stay. They can create pools, they can create performance programs, they can create all kinds of stuff that effectively funnels free money to the best players, and even still, that will not come close to what LIV can do for the best, most visible players. And those are the ones that move the needle. The good news for the PGA Tour, if there's any, is that at this point, pretty much every player who moves the needle, or any kind of needle, has been accounted for. All of them. That's it. So, now you have to decide, do you want the Saudis' money? You want to let them keep trying to poach? Or is there a way you can change your governance structure? And this is maybe something Tiger was talking about at the Hero. That you can change your governance structure in a way that will allow you to pay players, have contracts. If you can do that, then you can align yourselves without the Saudis, and you can create that kind of system. If you can do that, then you have an ace up your sleeve that I don't know about. If you can't, welcome to the board, Yasser Al-Ramayan. That's the end of it, okay? So, all that to say, I mean, again, I find this stuff fascinating from a 30,000-foot perspective, from an in-the-weeds perspective. The whole thing is infuriating. It has turned, these last 2 years have turned a sport that obviously has a lot of flaws, has a lot of things that maybe don't align itself nicely to broad public viewership and support, but has probably torpedoed, nerfed the reputation of professional golf for 5, 10 years, I think. And the people who are drawing the comparisons to IndyCar F1 split up, to the IndyCar NASCAR fight, that's fine, although there really wasn't much of one, or to boxing's myriad organizations, that's something for sure. I think it's more akin to UFC at this point, battling like Bellator and PFL, like clear challenger leagues, because they don't have the same kind of money behind them. But, you know, you could draw your own comparisons. But there are all these sports that fractured are fractured for different reasons, and they face serious challenges. And golf has become one of them. And that's really unfortunate. For a lot of people, golf is something fun to watch on the weekends. Maybe Thursday, Friday, certain times a year. But they don't care about, in the main, they don't care about who's playing for what amount of money. And we have been over this in the entire FedEx Cup era. The FedEx Cup could be for $500 billion and no one will care any more about it. Because what people care about, get invested in, is they get invested in players and tournaments and courses and what the players attach value to. And now that will probably be super limited to the majors, maybe the players, the maybe components of the FedEx Cup, because I feel like there's been some more acceptance of that, but the tournament's not the concept. And then the Ryder Cup. And maybe the President's Cup if it gets more competitive. Like, that's it. That's what you've got. And you had stuff on the periphery that people would watch every now and then to spend time. You're going to lose a lot of people because of this. And it's really unfortunate. I don't know. Like, whatever all this gets done, whenever this deal gets done or doesn't get done, the next order of business for everyone involved is a whole lot of self-work and a whole lot of public-facing work to try to win back fans. And I don't know how you do that. Really don't. So we're in a very precarious moment in the sport, professionally speaking. But in terms of how we handle the participatory side, man, the people at USGA and the RNA got to be pretty darn happy that all this stuff is happening on the pro golf side, because that gives them a couple weeks pass to worry about the rollback. So, oh, gosh, what a tumultuous time. And we still have plenty to talk about this week. We've got PGA Tour Q School, which will be on, I think it's going to be on Peacock, if I remember right, maybe on Golf Channel. Hopefully you get to view some of that this week. That still matters. You've got, you had a promotions event on LIV that, you know, in without all the context around funding sources and stuff, was worth seven figures to Cal Samuja and Kieran Vinson and I don't forget everyone who got through. I'm sorry. Laurie, I know Laurie Cantor lost the playoff, but you know, that's a big deal to those people. You had LPGA Q School, you had Champions Tour Q School. A bunch of Aussies got through PGA Tour Champions Q School. Not worth the same amount of money, but it's a place to play when you're 50 and above. It's really cool. So, you know, Q schools still matter. You got the PNC Championship this week. You've got the Mauritius Open on the DP World Tour, their last event of the year. You've got some events that will be feel good. And I hope it's a chance for some people to feel good about golf for a couple of days and not have to think as much about all the stuff that's happening in boardrooms and conference calls and Zooms that are just crushing the sport at the moment. All right, that's going to do it for us today. Thanks so much for spending some time with us. I appreciate it. I'm glad I didn't upload the show I was going to plan on doing the day Rom left, because not that it would have looked bad at all. I just think it wouldn't have provided the proper context for everything. So I'm glad we just kind of waited for it to happen to do this one. And we'll be back with another show tomorrow. Hopefully the world will not, golf world will not blow up again. But if it does, we'll be here to talk about it. Get a hold of me, Ryan, at thegolfnewsnet.com, on Twitter, Threads, X, Instagram, and Blue Sky at Ryan Ballingy. Find me on YouTube, if you want, at Ryan Ballingy Golf, and Ryan Ballingy Golf on Facebook, too. I will see you tomorrow for another show. Thanks so much for listening to Two Off the First.